In the only words they knew, in the language of their time, 2,500-year-old texts remind us that there is such a power that lives within us. And in very eloquent words, these poets as well as scientists remind us that the key to this power is in our understanding that the world that we see around us is a mirror. It's a reflection of the feelings and the beliefs that live within us. Very simple, very eloquent, perhaps deceptively simple. The implications of such a perspective are vast, empowering, and I've discovered to some people, even a little frightening. The implication that somehow the events unfolding in the world around us are in any way whatsoever related to what's happening inside of our bodies, and perhaps taking it one step further, the implication that we may choose to participate in those events around us by changing what happens in our bodies. In such a view, the chaos of a changing world, for example, the violence in our families, our communities, even the unsettled patterns of nature are seen as mirrors of anger, rage, jealous competition, and hate that we harbor from within. On the other hand, the same view suggests that as we heal the personal challenges in our own lives, the challenges that we face day in and day out, through forgiveness, understanding, tolerance, and compassion, we may expect to see the great changes in the world around us as subtle and gentle patterns of change. Through these understandings, we're just beginning to recognize two very powerful technologies that allow us to determine, number one, the condition of our bodies, number two, the future of our world in ways perhaps that we've only dreamed of in the past. The first science, the science of prophecy, prophecy allowing us to witness future consequences of choices that we are making in our lives in the present. The second is the technology of prayer, and I'll be even more specific, perhaps modalities of prayer that we are just beginning to understand that allow us to choose which of those future prophecies we live in our personal lives, day in and day out, collectively, as a world. If such a power exists, we must ask ourselves this question. If it does exist, this inner technology, where is it today? Is it possible that an event has occurred somewhere in our past, in the midst of our ancient memory, that left a gap in our knowledge, perhaps of how we relate to our world, the cosmos, and even one another? Well, what our scholars openly acknowledge is that at least 25 books, for example, were taken from what today we call our biblical texts. This was done by a recommendation of the Council of Nicaea in the 4th century. We discussed this in more detail in other programs. So I'll just be very brief here and say that it is this kind of information, when it was lost, that began to imply that we are separate from our world, separate from the forces of the cosmos and one another. Even today, many of our scientific principles, spiritual practices, our history, our lineage of wisdom, who we are, where we come from, how we relate to one another, are based not in something that's wrong, however, in something that is incomplete, in incomplete understandings of our most ancient heritage. Perhaps some of the clearest records of these lost texts, specifically our spiritual sciences, began to reappear near the middle of the 20th century when they were discovered in a series of desert caves located near the ancient city of Jerusalem. And it is within these caves that our story begins. And it's an amazing story that begins with a young Bedouin boy in 1946 herding sheep along the sheer cliff faces, just as the people and his family had done for generations and generations. And on this day, this young boy did something different. He picked up a handful of stones. He threw them into one of the caves, apparently something he had done many times in the past. On this day, however, he threw them into a different cave. And when the stones entered the cave, instead of hitting a rock floor, he heard something different. Something broke inside of that cave. He heard something shatter. Well, it frightened him. He ran back at dusk to his parents the next morning. They went back to this cave. They explored the entrance to the cave. It was so small that they had to crawl in on their hands and knees. And what they found were a series of clay vases. And it was these vases that the stones had struck and had shattered. Inside of these vases were the remnants of a library that was stored in this place over 2,000 years ago. The vases were sealed with resin and straw, effectively keeping the moisture and the elements away from these texts, preserving them so that we may see them today. Between 1946 and 1959, in this area that we now know as Qumran, on the shores of the Dead Sea, 11 caves were discovered. In those 11 caves, over 25,000 fragments of papyrus, animal hide, some metallic fragments were discovered, some of them no more than maybe an inch square. Many of them were simply lying loose on the floor of these caves. These fragments comprised at least 800 scrolls, and those scrolls now and the fragments were all taken into an area, the Rockefeller Museum, just outside of Jerusalem, in an area that's known as the Scrollery, where a team of 8 scholars were given the task of assembling these fragments, translating the texts, compiling the information, and distributing it to the public. And this is an ongoing task today. The scrolls were deposited by a mysterious group that we know today as the Ancient Essenes. And I say mysterious because we don't know a lot about where the Essenes came from. They first appear in the Qumran area around 500 years before the time of Christ. They disappear in the first century after the crucifixion. The Essenes separated themselves from the communities of their time to live the truth, what they felt was the truth, of a lineage of wisdom that has been in this earth for over 4,000 years before the time of Christ. Over 6,000 years ago, this wisdom first appears. And we find elements of the Essene wisdom in every major religion and belief system, even those who are no longer in existence and including those still on the earth today. The Buddhist traditions, the Islamic traditions, the Christian traditions, the Jewish traditions, native and indigenous traditions, as different as they all appear today, there are common threads, elements that run between them that are all traced back to the wisdom of the ancient Essenes. We find information about the Essenes themselves in the text called the Manual of Discipline. It's through the Manual of Discipline that we know of their belief systems and their worldview and their insights that allows us to make sense out of the text that they left to us, as well as relatively mysterious texts describing a war between what they call the sons of darkness and the sons of light that plays out throughout time, and how our lives revolve around that battle between the sons of darkness and the sons of light. It is in the recovery of these texts now that we begin to find the value and gain the insights into the relevance of their wisdom, the Essene traditions, even in the presence of our very modern, highly sophisticated technological society today. The Essenes were saying something to us then, 2,500 years ago, that has tremendous relevance in our lives today.